He had stood there quite simply and modestly as he spoke, his eyes cast down. But when he had done, he suddenly directed his wide-open gaze upwards upon his brother's face, not as though he wanted to force his view aggressively upon the other, but rather as though he were silently offering his soul to be looked into, as though he were receiving the astonished and blinking stare of Leah's red-eyed son deep into the unfathomableness of his own gaze. The tower shook. Big Reuben shuddered. What did the lad mean? What was he trying to express? What was the origin of it all? Reuben had taunted him with his arrogance, and now he was sorry, for he had had his answer. He had asked in his wrath who the lad thought that he was. Ah, would that he had not done so, for now he had heard so riddlingly, that it made him shiver all the way down his back, long as it was. Was it chance that had shaped the words in the boy's mouth? Had he meant to play upon the divine and make use of it to justify his own duplicity? Or, and this or gave rise in the very marrow of Reuben's being to the same horror of which Brother Gadiel had complained as they stood at Joseph's bedside. Only it was stronger in Reuben, a profounder shock, and it was accompanied by a sort of admiration, a gentle, even tender amazement and terror. We must try to understand Reuben. He was not the man to be unique in misconstruing the significance of the question as to who one was, in whose footsteps one walked, to what past one's present had reference, in order to give it reality. Joseph had given evidence, in so monstrously presumptuous a way, as to make Reuben shudder. But the magic of the word, whereby the uppermost was turned undermost, an unforced and flexible and perfectly genuine use of language to work enchantment, brought before Reuben's eyes in brilliant clarity the footsteps in which his younger brother walked. He did not go so far at this moment to think of Joseph as a veiled god-goddess. That we must not suppose, but yet his love was not very far from becoming belief. "Child, child," said he in that piping voice out of his powerful body, "spare thine own soul, spare thy father, spare the light thou walkest in. Put it under a bushel, that it may not light thee unto thine undoing." He took 3 backward steps with drooping head, then turned and walked away. But at the evening meal, Joseph wore the coat. The brothers sat there like graven images. Jacob was full of fears. The sheaves. When these things had happened, and after many days, it came about that they were cutting the wheat in the vale of Shechem. It was the time of the harvest, and of joyous and sweating labor up till the day of the first fruits, when they made offering of leavened bread of the new wheaten flour 7 weeks after the spring full moon. For the late rains had been plenteous, but the hatches of the sky were early closed, the waters ran off, and the land dried. Marduk Bel, the son, the triumphant, drunk with his victory over the dripping Leviathan, ruled flaming in the heavens, and sent up golden spears into the blue. Even at the turn between the second and the third months, so great was the ardor of his sovereignty, that there might have been fears for the sowing, but that a wind sprang up, the welcome approach of which was first scented by Zebulun, 6th son of Leah, who said, "My nose is pleasantly assailed by this wind, for it bringeth moisture from afar, and beareth on its wings the refreshing dew. Lo, now, as I always say, what great good cometh from the sea! Better it were to dwell by the edge of the green vast, and close to Sidon, rather than to tend the sheep, which pleaseth me but little. For upon the wave and on the shapen plank one can reach folk who wear tails, and a lighted horn upon their foreheads, or to such as have ears so great as to cover the whole body, and others whose forms are covered with grass. A man from the port of Hadati told me of all this." Naphtali agreed with him. It would be good to exchange news with these grass-grown folk, for most likely neither they nor the ear-lapped nor the tailed creatures had the least notion what went on in the world. But the others dissented and would hear nothing of the sea, even though it brought the moisture-bearing wind. These were subterranean regions, full of monsters of the prime. Zebulun might just as well express admiration for the desert. Simeon and Levi expressed themselves with peculiar force in this sense. They were crude but religious, and at bottom they did not much care for the shepherd's life, preferring something more exciting, though they stuck to this one for the sake of the succession. The harvesting, beginning with the reaping of the barley, was a welcome change for them all. They sweated blithely in their hopes of profit, as one does at this season. Even their relations with Joseph sensibly improved, as he worked by their side, cutting and binding, until by his irresponsible chatter he ruined everything again and reduced them to extremes, all which I shall relate in due course. As for Jacob, these seasonal joys touched him but little, though all the district yielded to them with gusto, his own sons swinking in the midst of the sweating peasantry. Rather, he had a dampening effect upon the gaiety, even without appearing on the field, which he seldom did. This time he came once, by way of exception, and at the request of Joseph, who had his own reasons for making it. But on the whole, Jacob troubled little about the sowing and mowing, carrying on his bit of farming, as it were, without looking at it, and only out of prudence, not inclination. Nay, he felt not only indifference, but even disinclination to the whole sphere, the religious hostility of the moon-shepherd toward the duty which the sun-burnt farmer paid the earth. The harvest time was even, in a certain sense, an embarrassment to him, in the sense that it made him draw profit from the cult of fertility which the children of the country paid from spring to spring to the sun-gods and love-women of their temples, a cult abhorrent to his soul. He was rather ashamed of drawing profit from it, and closed his lips tightly when he heard the thanksgiving hymns of the workers bringing home their sheaves. After the barley harvest, he ordered the wheat to be cut for the provisioning of his own people, and as every pair of arms was needed, Eliezer having also taken on a few hired hands for the harvest weeks, Joseph's studies with the latter were interrupted, and he too, in his own exalted person, labored from early morn to dewy eve in the fields. He attacked the bearded grain with the sickle, gathering the stalks together with his right hand. He bound the sheaves with straw, and helped the brethren and the hands to load them on carts, or hang them on asses to be brought to the threshing floor. We must recognize that he did all this gladly and willingly, not looking upon it as an imposition, and in simple modesty. But it is also true that his attitude toward the work was in flat contradiction to certain revelations of his inward life, which he permitted himself precisely at this very time. In any case, it would have been easy for him to get Jacob's permission not to appear on the field, yet he never thought of doing so, partly because he liked the work, but even more because it brought him into contact with the brethren, and he felt pride and pleasure in working among them, helping them, hearing them call him by name. All that was literally true. Labor upon a common task improved relations between him and them. It uplifted his heart. It made him happy. However inconsistent all this may seem, it was the truth. The seeming contradictions cannot do away with the fact that he loved his brothers, that, however senseless and even deluded it may seem, he counted on their love and expected some advantage from it, for the unhappy lad little imagined how much he asked. The field work tired him very much, and he often took short naps. Was asleep, indeed, at the midday hour, which found all the sons of Jacob, save Benjamin, gathered to rest and eat beneath a brown awning stretched over crooked poles. They had broken bread and talked, squatting on their heels. Each of them wore, for all clothing, a leather apron. Their bodies were burnt by the ardor of the sun, which blazed down between fleecy clouds upon the half-harvested field. Here and there, the sickle had made breaches in the golden host, leaving patches of stubble dotted with leaning sheaves and bounded by low walls of rubble which served to divide Jacob's land from that of the peasants. At a little distance stood the hill which served his people for a threshing floor. Laden asses were on their way thither, and men were on top, using pitchforks to separate the stalks and toss them down before the oxen. Joseph then, likewise in his working apron, his skin glowing from the sun, was asleep in a squatting posture, with his head on his arm. When he lay down, he had in all simplicity begged Issachar, the bony ass who sat next to him, to lend him one of his knees to prop up his head. But Issachar had inquired whether he would not also like him to scratch his head and to keep off the flies, and then curtly bade him to be his own pillow. Joseph had laughed and taken it in good part, resigning himself to sleep without the desired prop. He found it elsewhere, as we shall see. But for the moment nobody was paying him any attention. Only Reuben glanced now and again at the sleeper's face as it lay turned toward him. It was not in repose. The forehead was drawn, the lips twitched, and the partly open mouth moved as though to speak. Meanwhile, the brethren had been discussing the pros and cons of a new sort of implement which had come into use of late, the threshing table. It was drawn by oxen and had pointed stones on the underside, which tore the ears. It was undeniable that it saved time, but some of them said that the winnowing afterwards was harder work than if the grain had been thoroughly trodden out by means of oxen. Also, they spoke of a threshing cart used by many of the peasants. It ran on rollers and was fitted with sharp iron plates. At that point, Joseph roused and sat up. "I have had a dream," he said, looking round upon the brethren and smiling as though in surprise. They turned away their heads and went on talking. "I have had a dream," he repeated, and rubbed his hands across his brows as though still dazed, smiling pleasantly as he gazed into space. "Such a vivid and wonderful dream!" "What is that to us?" retorted Dan, suddenly turning his prominent eyes upon Joseph. "Better is it to sleep without dreams, if thou needs must sleep, for dreams, so they say, are not refreshing."
"Would you like to hear my dream?" asked Joseph.
Nobody answered. One of them, it was Jehuda, went on with their discussion in a tone which was itself a proper reply to such a question. "It is needful," he said in a clear, detached voice, "to keep the iron blades very sharp, as otherwise they do not cut but crush, and the grain cometh not fully out of the ear. But consider if we can rely upon the laborers, especially the hired hands, to sharpen them regularly. And then, if the little wheels, on the other hand, are very sharp, they cut the grain, and so cometh it that the meal—" Joseph listened a while to the talk passing over his head, but finally he interrupted and said,
"Forgive me, brothers, but I feel drawn to tell you this dream which I have had. It was not a long dream, but so real and marvelous that I desire not to keep it to myself, but from my heart I yearn to put it before each of your eyes, that ye may laugh for joy and slap your thighs."
"Hearken," said Judah, and shook his head. "What aileth thee that thou troublest us with matters that concern us not? For what do we care about thine inward workings, or the ferment of thy dreams, or what riseth from thy belly to thy head after eating? It is not seemly to speak of it, and it concerneth us not at all. Therefore be quiet."
"But it doth concern you," Joseph eagerly cried. "It concerneth you all, for you all come into it, and so do I. And my dream is so full of meaning and marvel that you might well sit with your heads in your hands and think of naught else for 3 days long."
"Shall he tell us it, then, in a few words, without more ado, so that we may know it?" Asher asked. People with a sweet tooth are often very inquisitive, and indeed they were all curious and liked well to hear stories told, and the fact and fable, the legend, dream, song, and story of primitive time.
"Very good, then," Joseph said with satisfaction. "If you like, I will tell you my vision, which is worth hearing on account of its meaning alone. For the dreamer shall not interpret his dream, but another shall do it for him. If any of you dream and ask me, I will tell him the meaning. It costeth me naught, for the Lord giveth it to me for the asking. But with mine own it is different."
"Dost thou call that a few words?" asked Gad.
"Listen, then," Joseph began. But at the last moment, Reuben would have prevented him. He had been watching the owner of the veil all this time, and his mind misgave him.
"Joseph," said he, "I know not thy dream, for I lay not with thee in thy sleep, where thou wast alone. But meseemeth it were better each one should be alone with his own dreams, and thou shouldst keep thy dream to thyself, that we may all go to work."
"We were at work," Joseph snatched up his words, "for upon the field saw I us all together, us sons of Jacob, and we were harvesting the grain.
Marvelous, cried Naphtali. That is a dream like to an unreal vision, forsooth. And thy dreams are remote from us, and very fantastic and high-colored indeed.
But it was not our own field, went on Joseph. It was the field of another, very strange to us. But we spoke not of it.
We labored together without speech, and bound the sheaves after cutting the stalks. That is a great dream before the Lord, said Zebulun, a vision incomparable. For of course, thou dolt, we should have bound first and cut afterwards. Must we hear it all, even to the end?
Some of the brethren had already got up, shrugging their shoulders and making ready to leave.
Yea, hear it up till the end, cried Joseph, lifting his hands. For now cometh the marvel. Each of us was binding a sheaf, and we were 12, for Benjamin too was with us in the field, and bound his little sheaf with you in a circle.
Do not talk rubbish, ordered Gad. Why, with you in a circle, when thou meanest with us?
Not so, Gadiel, for my meaning is far otherwise. For ye made up the circle, the 11 of you, and were binding, but I stood in the center of the circle and bound my sheaf.
He paused and looked into their faces. They had all lifted their brows and tipped back their necks, so that the Adam's apple stood out as their heads swayed slightly. Misgiving, amazement, mockery, and warning were expressed in all their attitudes. They were waiting.
"Hearken now how it fell out, and how wonderful was my dream," said Joseph again. "When we had bound our sheaves, each one his own, we left them and went away, not speaking, and as though we had nothing more to do there. But we had gone only 20 paces or so together, when, lo, Reuben turned round to look, and motioned backward with his hand to the place where we had been. Yea, Reuben, it was thou. We all stood and looked, shading our eyes. And behold, my sheaf arose there in the middle, and also stood upright. And your sheaves stood round about, and made obeisance to my sheaf. And mine stood upright.